you're a regular listener of Does Not Compute, chances are you love using computers to solve hard problems. That's what today's sponsor, Gusto, is all about. Gusto makes payroll, benefits, and HR all a breeze for small businesses, and they're hiring right now in San Francisco and Denver. Engineers at Gusto own their features end-to-end, working on every part from React components to Rails APIs for those components to talk to. By making technology do the heavy lifting, you'll be directly helping small business owners reclaim their time so they can focus on doing whatever it is they do best. The most fun, rewarding programming challenges tend to be the most complex ones, and there's no shortage of complexity when dealing with payroll, benefits, and HR. You'll get to help design a system that can deal with shifting regulatory requirements in the United States and around the world. Head over to gusto.com/spec.fm to learn more about their open positions, benefits, and tons more about Gusto itself. If making life easier for small business owners sounds like a challenge you'd enjoy, make sure to check out Gusto today at gusto.com/spec.fm. Oh, man. If only you had anything to talk about this week, huh, Sean?
I can't think of anything.
Can't think of anything that's new or interesting.
No. Beyond ImageX is very useful tool.
It is. It is a very useful tool. And a good one of the great services, I feel like.
One of the greats. Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of how much time it saved me, at least. Time and headache.
Yeah, so I'm working today, even though Lindsay kind of scolded me a little bit for, she was like, why are you working on Saturday? And I said, because I told you a date and I'm going to stick to it. So I'm working on some emails and they're supposed to be going out on Monday and Tuesday. So basically I'm building like a magazine type system for DK, and it's comprised of campaigns and issues, and each issue, it would be like a magazine issue, and it has a curated selection of products from our team of designers. And so I'm working on the automated emails for that. And each issue has like a different title and summary and things. So I'm using ImageX to kind of like superimpose text onto images so I can build a more interesting looking email header. Because most of them I see that I've subscribed to, they're just real bad. They don't look good. It's just like a wall of things coming at you. So I want to kind of have more of like a sleek presentation. So ImageX is helping me get there.
Yeah, I mean you can't really do that in CSS and emails, as I'm sure most everybody knows.
Right.
Just because you're so limited with what you can do in HTML emails, and so that is a really awesome way. I've used them for that in the past a couple times, just to spice up an email and kind of actually have a bit of creative visual control over it. Very good use case.
Yeah. I mean, like in at the same time, keeping it dynamic, you know, making it easier to have things be pretty unique while kind of using the same parameters, which is really nice. It's like for emails, it's really nice to have that. So that's what I've been doing, ingesting documentation for that and building the emails. It's kind of nice because I can't remember when you pointed it out to me, but I've been using Cerberus. I can't remember what it's called exactly.
Cerberus,
yeah. For building out like email partials. So I have just a collection of partials that I can construct emails with. And then they're all kind of like derived from that base package.
Yeah, stuff like that does. I mean, emails are so unpleasant to code and so unpleasant to maintain and deal with. So having some tools that you really like and that make things easier, or like in the case of ImageX, kind of just possible at all, is really important, I feel like.
Yeah. It's not quite as fun on a Saturday, but
no. Yeah, I'm in the same kind of boat where, I finished my first week at Design Collective,
which is pretty cool.
It was fun, and I learned a lot already. I was saying to you the other day, like, starting in a new code base that's already established always feels kind of like moving day. It's like you get to the new place and you unload all your boxes, and it's like, I know everything is here somewhere. I just don't really know exactly where, and it takes a really long time to find anything. And I'm still kind of in that boat, but
yeah,
I think I'm getting there bit by bit.
You just put your boxes on my boxes. You just put your boxes in the boxes that were already there, because when I moved in, because I didn't, you know, I may have rewritten it, but as you saw this week, there are a number of places that are in need of refactoring and just general code reviews, because while I was rewriting the thing from scratch, most of the functionality was just a one-to-one port. So I didn't have time to actually refactor everything from scratch. It was more like a port to another language. So instead of unpacking all the boxes and putting the things away, what I did was I just kicked the boxes into a different room.
Yeah, you just made room for some new boxes to go in, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how it goes sometimes, especially like this is another thing we've been talking about a lot, is the idea of being a solo dev working on any sort of project at scale. It's nearly impossible, honestly. It's really tough. There's just so much to think about, and you can do it, but keeping things clean and like going back and reorganizing old stuff, man, that's always the first thing to go, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just time management too. Not having enough time to do everything I need to do, which is the whole reason why, you know, we get another developer, so that we can kind of like manage that time, like have more. There's, you know, so now instead of 8 hours per day, we have 16 hours, like developer hours per day to get stuff done.
Right. Right.
I didn't reject any of your pull requests, and you reviewed some of my pull requests, and it was good. It was, in a word, like it just brings me more energy, I guess, in a way to describe it. I feel not quite as tired. maybe that's a bad way to say it, but like when I see someone doing work and caring about the work that they're doing and they're doing it well, it makes me want to care about what I'm doing more. And not that I didn't care about things before. It's just that, you know, I felt like the rabbit from Alice in Wonderland just running around.
It's hard to care when you just don't have the time to care. When literally all of the time that you're putting in is just going into like, go, 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 go. Got to add this new thing. Got to fix this thing. And you get into sort of a feeling, at least this has been my experience, where it's like, I just got to get this out. I just got to release this. It just has to be done because I have to move on to the next thing. I don't have the time to really think this through. I don't have the time to really make sure that I'm doing this in the best way possible. I'm just getting it done. And that's what I'm really, really trying to avoid now. I'm trying to take my time, make sure things are polished, make sure things are just really thought out. Mm-hmm. And so far, it's been, I feel like I've been able to do that pretty well at Design Collective. Like, actually, there's not a bunch of external pressure or internal pressure to just rush and release. It's more like everybody understands that good things take time, and so you're encouraged to take time on good things.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. It's very true. That's what I'm trying to take my time and not rush through all this stuff, but I just wasn't as productive through the last week as I wanted to be, which is why I ended up here doing what I'm doing right now. But now even down to things like, I woke up one morning to a pull request that said, move slowly and leave things better than you found them, which was really cool. Because that, again, it was like another energizing action for me. So like, I see something like that and it makes me feel good about what I'm doing and about the work that I'm doing and the things that we're doing together too. And so it brings, it's weird to say it this way, but it's like a life giving energy almost. Like, it makes me feel not half dead and tired and worn out to see something like that. But that was like maybe the best thing that I could hope for in terms of like bringing on another developer, is seeing things like that happen, you know? And it's kind of like, since we're only two people, then we have a whole thing, like a whole ecosystem to manage, it's kind of imperative in a team that you have team members that prop you up like that, that kind of empower you to do better work yourself. And I don't know, like that, I think that was maybe the coolest thing that I learned this week, or maybe the thing that I learned that I didn't know was as important to me as it actually is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Oh man. It is just crazy jumping into a new code base, though. I feel like my head is just swimming constantly. Every time I'm working on it, it's like, where is that thing again? Oh, I don't even know how many times I've opened the wrong like store schema or whatever, store module. And be like, wait, that's not quite, what am I looking at? Then I remember there's five others.
Yeah, there's probably more than five. It's I still have feelings here and there about spreading it out. I think maybe the saving grace for that is that it's almost literally impossible for you to break bring the whole thing down. So if you did break something, it would only be broken in that context. Everything else
sure.
continued to function normal, which is nice. Because in contrast, in systems or even like design systems where you have more of like a God table or a God schema that things derive from, if you break that, it cascades everywhere. I guess it's similar to, and I never thought about this before, but it's similar to like moving from utilizing CSS's cascade all over the place to using more utility-based setup where your classes are isolated in scope. And it feels to me like that's kind of how I've put together the backend in terms of like separating the schemas out. So each, we have multiple contexts, like a marketplace context, orders context, shipping context. And so each of those contexts dip into the product's table, but they don't all inherit from the same schema. They all define their own product schema, even though it's all getting data from the same table. And to me, that's kind of like the parallel is I'm trying to make like little pieces of Legos that I can use, but also aren't all interconnected at the same time.
Right. And I'm sure as we grow this even more, we're going to kind of eventually reach an equilibrium, I guess. On how broken up things actually should be and at what point it becomes counterproductive. And I mean, honestly, that's some of the stuff I'm most excited about moving forward is just like actually getting to spend time really architecting out a large application, mostly from the ground up. Like we're still pretty close to ground level. There's a lot of stuff there, but there's still so much to be done. I don't know, that's really exciting.
Well, it's getting more complicated every day. So, and it's cool that you've kind of come in the place where you've come in because up until the point, it's been like moving from MVP style to adding more user rules, adding more. So this is something that I made an issue for that I want to talk about a little bit further. Just think about. So I've been kind of struggling like, okay, how do I implement like some sort of ACL, like user access controls, and verify that without cluttering, because that kind of feels like it should be a little bit separate from the pure context functions, which are just like listing data or changing data. And I've seen some libraries like, what's it called? Pundit in Ruby, where they give you this idea of a scope. So you go through the Pundit, class, and then you use a scope, and the scope returns you a subset of items that current user is able to see. And in Design Collective, it goes a little bit farther because not only have products, some products can't be seen by all people, you know, some products can only be seen by the store that owns them if it's not published, for example. But now we have like prices that are changing based off of the user's role, and we have shipping prices that are changing based off their proximity to that user. And so I'm struggling to figure out, okay, so like it's kind of like augmenting a table, right? So that information isn't persisted anywhere. It's kind of calculated on the fly. It depends on several dynamic pieces. And so I'm trying to figure out like, okay, where does that actually live? It shouldn't really live in the context where the data is being fetched. I feel like it should live somewhere else. It doesn't belong in the controller either, right? Because the controller really should just be getting and sending, you know? Controller is just kind of passing values to a function and then returning that response to the user. So I feel like there's some sort of middle layer in that sandwich that I want to add that kind of like takes a list of products, takes a user, and then it might add virtual fields onto that list for each product. And then that happens before it gets sent back to the controller, which, that, you know, then that gets sent to the user. But so there's a lot of like little moving pieces that I'm thinking about refactoring or we need to add. And it's great that you're around now because we'll have more bandwidth to be able to do that. Because right now what I'm doing is just like copying and pasting functions.
You mentioned stuff not belonging in the controller. And that's been one of the things about actually working with Elixir in a real sense at an actual job that I wasn't really expecting to be this surprised by or this happy about, mm-hmm. but I can keep controllers so clean now.
Oh yeah,
like there's something about just the way contexts work. There that feel it's magical, not in like the I don't understand what's going on. It just works kind of thing. But it's magical in the way it makes me think. I'm just, I can make controller actions. They should be like one line, basically. A couple lines. And it's so easy to do that just because of the way Phoenix tells you to build your application, or rather doesn't interfere with how you want to build your application.
Right. Yeah. It's cool because, like we were saying, a controller should be, it should take accept parameters from the request. It should forward those to something that does something with the parameters. And the controller really should only ever handle a success or an error response.
Yep.
So if it was good, then send a good status. If it was bad, send a bad status. That's it. Now, there are places in Design Collective where it does a little bit more. And I think that was what's really interesting, and I explained this to you, is looking at the code in some places, like looking at a time capsule of how I've learned Elixir, or of like how I've matured in building applications at full stack. So you can actually see in places where I haven't been able to touch in a while, where the code was written when Phoenix 1.2 was the released version. And this was before I even knew what contexts were, or like those were even talked about in terms of Phoenix. And so you can tell immediately when you're in a part of the code base that has been around for a while.
Oh yeah. It really is pretty night and day. Even as somebody who is still relatively new to the language, it's pretty clear when stuff is old without having to look at Git or anything.
Yeah. You're like, what but is
that's amazing to me though. That's so cool. I think that really is more evidence of how magical the Phoenix setup really is, and contexts are. Like it totally changes the way you think about the way you think about where to put code.
Yeah. And I think that's perhaps maybe the coolest thing to me about Phoenix is that's not even really a feature of Phoenix. It was an idea that they're like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be. So if you go back in time and you start looking at some of the YouTube videos where they start talking about, we're going to introduce contexts, because it took a while and there was a lot of backlash and people were like, we don't like this. It makes things more complicated. But the whole reason why they did that in the first place, and this is, and the whole reason why Chris kind of, I like added this idea of context, of like separating your business logic into a totally different app that has nothing to do with sending data to the client, it's just a collection of functions, was because of that very same reason. Code, like he was seeing a lot of code bases, because he does consulting as well. So you're seeing a lot of code bases that are just becoming more and more unmaintainable because a lot of the logic was being pushed into controllers. Because there wasn't like, well, actually there was a models folder. And so people were in the models folder, they were just dumping everything like you would do in Rails. I mean, certainly not everyone would do that. There's better ways to do it. But people were kind of like dumping everything into these giant schemas that were used everywhere across the application. So it made things brittle. It made the application hard to change because it literally affected everything. And it was cool that they didn't like introduce code into Phoenix to kind of solve that problem. All they did was try to educate the community.
Right. It's more of a lack of a feature than it is actually a feature.
Yeah. So yeah, really, like if you're looking at a Phoenix app, the Phoenix app is only the like underscore web. That's what the Phoenix app is. Right. And really it's just controllers and views and channels. I mean, that's like the whole thing. Everything else is just straight up Elixir, which I love that, because it forces you to learn the language, and it removes some sort of mysticism. So to me right now, the only magical thing that Phoenix does is introspecting views and kind of predicting where a template will live. That's kind of like behind the scenes, kind of like black box stuff, but that's literally the only thing.
Right. And I mean, that even you just follow a folder structure that is pretty self-explanatory. For anybody who's used Rails, it'll be mostly the same.
Yeah, just follow the namespace, really. That's it. Right. You just have to follow whatever namespace. Like, wherever the view is, it's almost a folder directory that patterns after it, which is what I've been doing. But yeah, I mean, I think that I've been able to do a lot more complicated things now with more peace of mind because things are so separated. So I'm working on this campaign's context, and it uses data from the products table, the stores table, and also issues in campaigns table. But because I redefined my schemas, it, you know, it's completely isolated to that folder. And so unless I actually change the database and break something there, there's no way I can bring down the entire application. So if I jack up something with the campaigns, someone, you know, no one's going to have to wait for me to push a hotfix before they can actually purchase a product. You know, that's completely unaffected, which is kind of why I went this direction, is because I felt like if something was going to go bad, I would rather have it be completely isolated. And if I was going to have to like add a table to products that's used all over the place, I'd rather have that be kind of a pain in the butt. Because as soon as I start changing tables, all my tests start failing everywhere. And I can just go through and fix them up, you know? But again, if I miss it in one spot, it doesn't bring everything else crashing down.
Yeah, definitely. That isolation brings a lot of peace of mind.
Yeah,
especially probably, in conjunction with good tests.
Probably more than I should rely on it. I am writing. You know the number of tests that we have for the size of the code base. It's not bad.
No.
And it's growing.
I need to write some tests later this afternoon. Ugh.
Yeah, it keeps growing. I mean, it's just so simple, you know. And that's something that we were talking about too. Is when I first started working on Design Collective, I started pulling in all these dependencies. I need to do this and I need to do that. And since then, I haven't pulled in a new dependency in a long time unless it was absolutely necessary. And even things like write for tests, you know, we were talking about, okay, how do you manage factories or how do you manage test data? And I said, well, at first I was using Factory Girl, and then it got unwieldy because it uses metaprogramming and stuff. And while that's fine, it's really not that complicated. It's just something else to know about, when really all I need is a couple of functions for my context tests, and I have the fixtures that I need with the data that I need, you know. And it's a lot simpler because I don't have to go jumping through files, and sometimes you can't find the source because it was metaprogrammed in, it was used in, or whatever. So your autocomplete doesn't get you there all the way. Mm-hmm. So you know, so. The whole process, like, it's funny because as I learn more about Elixir and Phoenix and building apps in Elixir, things just become simpler. I start shedding dependencies. I start getting rid of libraries that I thought I needed. And I start replacing entire libraries with a single function or two functions or maybe even three functions. And they do pretty much exactly the same thing that I needed. It's just in line right there, less complicated, less overhead, less context. It's just a couple of functions.
Less complicated. And if something goes wrong with it, you can go there and look at it and change it really easily.
Right.
Or add whatever features you need if you need to do something different with it down the road. It's just really, really simple. Not only for your present self, but also for your future self, I feel like.
Yeah. And kind of like going the Ex Machina route, like Ex Machina is pretty okay. It's similar to Factory Girl for Rails. I think that I would be more okay with using it with Design Collective if I didn't set it up originally how the README told me to set it up. Because the README kind of walks you through setting it up in a way that you only have one factory for. So basically, it's kind of like the same idea of a God table or a God schema, where no matter how many contexts you have, you might be only mapping that data from the database once. So you might have only one factory for that. But then again, when you're writing tests, that factory has a lot of information that you won't need for certain places. And that can cause some false flags either to fail or to pass, you know, because then you're just inheriting lots of state that you really don't need in that place. So I think that's kind of why I moved away from it for Design Collective, is because I'm like, well, I have these split schemas. I don't want to keep defining these factories all over the place. I'd rather just have a function. I can drop a function. It only uses the data that the schema can, that context and schema is able to pull from the database, if that makes sense. There's nothing else there. There's no extra baggage there. It just makes it lighter and simpler, and I only need to know about what I'm working with at that point in time.
Right. I mean, well, that's basically just applying the same approach that you have in the rest of the code base to your test, which,
yeah.
I mean, totally makes sense. It's a sense of, like, why wouldn't you do it that way?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So we should probably talk a little bit about VS Code.
Oh.
Oh, you're ready. Because we're using VS Code.
You're ready to talk about that now?
I'm ready to talk about it. So I've switched over to VS Code when I started learning Elixir a couple months ago. And so I've been using it for personal projects and stuff, but this is my first time using it professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And man, it's great. You have a killer setup going already for VS Code. So all the workspace settings are just synced in Git. And so when I first cloned the repo, it just popped up a thing saying, hey, here's all the extensions recommended by this workspace. Do you want to install them? Clicked a button. It was done. All the settings were there in place. Things are being auto-formatted and linted. It like every time I save, my code just gets formatted exactly how all of the code in the app is formatted. And it is, man, these tools have come so, so far. And they're really, really good now and just saving a ridiculous amount of time.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that you liked that a lot, because I spent a little bit of time on it, but really the credit should go to friend of the show, Chris Fritz from the Vue community, because I just jacked something he shared with me. Most of the workspace settings he had already set up for his kind of like boilerplate for new projects. So I just kind of took those, configured them to what I liked, and I knew what you liked because we've worked together in the past. So I was able to kind of put something together that I thought that we'd be able to agree on, or like that neither one of us would completely hate. And yeah, so I mean, code is just a really good editor. I mean, part of that like niceness goes to, like you were saying, the Elixir, you know, for implementing formatting at a language level. That just solves a lot of problems. And so yeah, it's just another, I guess the other credit goes to the Elixir LS plugin, because if you're using a newer version of Elixir, it'll just auto-format when you save. So it, whenever you're writing code, it just runs it through the format task and you're good to go. And then, you know, obviously prettier for JavaScript and literally everything else, almost everything else. Like Markdown, I have that going too. It just is so much less to think about, which is what I'm after. I want to, because that's the kind of stuff that I get distracted by, to be honest, which is maybe dumb, but I spend a lot of time like nitpicking and moving code around and formatting in a certain way. So if I remove that from something that I'm able to do, because if I've put it a certain way and then save and it gets put back how it was,
just switches it back. Yeah.
I just give up. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'll learn to accept that.
That's exactly it. Like there are a few things, that I've come across where it's like, I don't know if I like that, the way that it formats this thing. But then I just think about it for a second. I'm like, whatever,
it doesn't matter.
It's all consistent and it's all automatic, and it's great, because I don't think it's silly at all. Like I think a lot of developers do that. I know I do that. Go through and like just nitpick how things are formatted or laid out or arranged or whatever. And now I just can't. Now it's just, I have it for free and it's done and I don't have to think about it. And every single file, like if you work on a file and you have a little bit of a different writing style than I do, and then I go in, doesn't matter. You don't have a different writing style, because we're both, it, when we save it and commit it, it's going to be exactly the same.
Oh, yeah. Even down to like the Vue stuff too. ESLint for Vue and Viter. So Viter is a super good plugin for VS Code and Vue. And you can use ESLint Vue now. And so it'll even down to like tell you the order in which the lifecycle function should be added to a Vue component. Because that was one thing that would always bother me. So I'd be like, I'd be on a productive streak. I'd open up a Vue component and it'd just be all over the place. And it'd be like, nope. I'll start reformatting and then forget what I was doing. And so now that I just like have to put things in a certain order, I just kind of forgot what I preferred before. And so now I'm just used to what ESLint Vue tells me to do. Like put like any mounting and creation stuff before like methods and computer properties and stuff like that, for example. So I just like the lack of being able to have a choice there. And I feel like it just allows me to see through that and actually focus on what I'm doing. And that was one of the biggest things I wanted, was to kind of remove that friction and for us to be able to, focus on what the work that we're actually doing. And I mean, you were able to, you shipped something into production on day one, the first day, you know, and the second day after. So I had told everyone that I was headed to Jiu-Jitsu, but I hadn't left yet. So I was still technically around when they're like, hey, we want this changed. And you just jumped in and did it on like day two, you know, you shipped another and changed the production. So yeah, I'm just really looking forward to like getting into a rhythm, getting into like our cadence, I guess, frequency and things like that. Because we have like, what, 80 issues open in GitHub now? Obviously not all of them bugs.
I don't even want to look. It's so many.
It's 80. I looked at it just now. But yeah, we have our work cut out for us for sure. But I don't know. I was reading an article today on Medium, and I'll link it in the show notes. But basically, it was titled "What I Wish I Knew Before I Became CTO," and there were a few things that I really liked in the article. And one of them was talking about how important your framework choices are, because there's like I've even gone back and forth. Like, it's important what you choose. It's not important what you choose. You just gotta make it so. And So he was just saying like it's super important what you choose, the tools that you choose, because you're gonna be using them for a long time. Especially like the more features you add in, you're going, you know, it makes it harder and harder to rewrite something. Or it makes it harder and harder to adopt something new and replace that, because it's just growing. The service area is growing. And that's why I'm super happy that Lindsay was like, yeah, that sounds good. When I pitched her the idea of rewriting it in Elixir. And I'm really glad that this is the ecosystem that we're in, because we're going to be in it for a while, for the foreseeable future, I guess. And the other important thing that I liked, he said a lot, was don't hire somebody to do something that you don't yet know how to do. Cause that was one thing he was talking about, is like when to hire people. For example, like you should only hire someone when you just can't keep up. You shouldn't hire someone to try to cause growth, for example. And I felt like that was a position that we were in, you know, I just couldn't keep up. So we brought you in, and, so I was feeling pretty validated by the article, because I was like, yeah, I feel like we're in a good ecosystem. I like the ecosystem a lot. We just brought in our first programming hire, because I just couldn't keep up. So overall, it's been like an encouraging week for me.
That's awesome, man. So going back to the formatting for a second, I found that it's ridiculously helpful in Elixir for me in particular, because quite frankly, I still find a lot of Elixir syntax, not necessarily syntax, but like the way that you're supposed to actually format things in terms of when to do line breaks or not, and when to indent things in certain ways, I still find it like pretty hard to wrap my head around. And I'm pretty sure that the Elixir code I'm shipping would be a lot messier looking if not for this. Just like objectively worse. And sure. So that's been something that I just don't, not having to think about it in JavaScript is nice, but it's kind of like actually enabling me to ship Elixir code that I probably wouldn't be able to write otherwise. And it's still taking me a while. Like, it's still taking me a bit. I'm not fast yet. I kind of feel like I said to you before, it feels like I'm two finger hunting pecking whenever yeah. I'm doing Elixir stuff. But man, just having that one thing taken off your mind, how do I lay this code out, is, especially if we're learning a new language, just awesome. Because then, you know, you save it and you look at it and you're like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. Or I need to ingrain these patterns into my head more or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you see the official way of doing it. I can't believe that other languages, or at least many other languages, don't have official rules for formatting.
Yeah.
Now that I'm working in Elixir and it does have these rules, it seems wild. It seems wild to me to have a popular programming language and not have a really strong from the top set of rules determining how you write yeah. that code, how you yeah. lay it out.
Yeah. It's interesting, because you can go and look in the Elixir forums and you can see the, Jose and Jose, he's Brazilian. So I think it's Jose. You can see Jose talking about, exactly why, or like even thinking, like kicking around the idea of a formatter. And he was like, it just should be consistent. If you jump into a different code base, it should look like what you're used to. You know, because that, again, like you said, that removes a whole stumbling block. If the language is all formatted the same across projects, then you can skip language formatting and different dialects depending on, you know, who's writing the project, and you can jump right into code design and like reverse engineering things and getting that into your mind. But you just skip a step.
There's such a weird ego thing, I feel like, for a lot of programmers around personal styles. Like yeah. how people like to lay out their JavaScript, how people like to lay out their CSS, their HTML, whatever. And that's really dumb. I've fallen into that trap myself so many times, where it's like, I always do my indentation this way, or I always lay out whatever this way, because that's mm-hmm. the best way to do it. And it's just, that's so arbitrary and ridiculous. But actually having a set of rules from the people who are making the language and who are thinking about it like all the time, that's great. I love that.
Yeah. And that's why I like tools like Prettier as well, because you can set it up and it follows, you know, what you like, the style that you want to write. And then it just does the thing. So even if someone didn't agree with the rules, it's not a problem because they don't have to write it. You know, they can write JavaScript however they want, and then they click save, and then that's reformatted for them. So if you really want to type semicolons, for example, I'm using the JS standard, which doesn't use semicolons. You probably write JavaScript with semicolons and it just strips them out because that's what you're used to. But that's a nice thing because, again, it's not a stumbling block for you. You don't have to be like, oh, shoot, I have to, why did this not compile correctly? Oh, the, you know, another semicolon. It just removes a feedback loop kind of thing, which is very important. And that's another thing I wanted to talk about was getting, there's like more that we can do because Elixir has a really good linter called Credo. It's like super, super good. And I want to get that implemented. So for example, like per pull request, if the PR comes in, it runs it through Credo. And Credo, like, it gives you language stuff, you know, it gives you unused variables, like, and it gives you like maybe kind of like advice on how to write functions for an application, which is also really nice. Kind of like the thing that you get with RubyCop with like complexity. It'll analyze complexity. It'll analyze like the number of things you're doing in a function and kind of give you input from there. But basically, like I want to add as many tools as we can use in the same manner that help us have to not think about that sort of thing. So that way we can keep our minds on the context.
Yeah. For so long, I had mixed feelings on these sorts of tools, on these linters and stuff. And now it's just at a point where the ecosystems around all these are so good that all the reasoning to not use them has kind of just melted away.
Yeah. Yeah. It just kind of melted away. So I don't know. I feel pretty good about it. Like someone can come in and they install the editor and then the settings are good to go and they can just be like, all right, let's look at the issues and not like, okay, how do we write code here? What plugins do I need? Et cetera, et cetera. It's just done for you. So now you can just jump into issues or wiki, look at the wiki and like try to figure out which ones are rotten, like which pages are rotten and old. That would be really cool if GitHub showed like an age, like number of days since it's been edited per page or something like that. But that's a whole other
nice
discussion. Yeah. We could have a whole nother discussion on branching and branching.
We actually need to have like a meeting or something about branching. Yeah. We need to get this figured out because we're semi using GitFlow right now, but not totally. And we need to figure out exactly how much we want to use it, I guess.
Yeah. 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 I feel pretty good about, I don't know. It works, but like, I like the idea of if you're using something, don't like pick and choose from it, just abide by it. Again, it kind of goes with the, okay, I'm willing to roll over if this thing makes my life a little bit easier. And then using GitFlow with Tower obviously is just super nice. VS Code also has a GitFlow plugin. So you can type Command Shift P feature, enter, type the feature name, and then it does the whole thing or like spin up a new release or a hotfix. It does all like the merging for you too, just like Tower does. And that would be the real reason why we'd use something like that is because there are tools there that kind of like abstract away the busy work involved in following that structure.
Yeah, it's just one less thing or a handful less things to think about. I like not thinking about things.
Yeah, it's nice. There's other, I have too many things to think about.
Oh, man. All right, well, I need to go work on this RV, I guess. We're leaving in like a week and a half or something, so I should probably have it ready to go.
Yeah, I should probably finish this email because it's leaving on Monday, so... Or about 100,000 of them are leaving on Monday, so.
Good luck to us both.
Yes.
Take it easy, man.
See ya.
Today's episode was brought to you by the folks at Gusto. Payroll, benefits, and HR can all be nightmares for small business owners to deal with. But Gusto makes it easy. They're currently hiring in San Francisco and Denver. So if you love solving complex programming challenges, this could be the job for you. You'll own your features end-to-end and directly help small business owners run their businesses. Interested? Check out Gusto today at gusto.com/spec.fm to learn more about open positions, benefits, and more.